Hey there, and welcome to Cyberpunk Librarian, Episode 17, Making a Display by Yourself. I'm Daniel Messer. Welcome back to another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, the show that examines the intersection of libraries and technology, and is all about living the high-tech, low-budget lifestyle. My name is Daniel Messer, the Cyberpunk Librarian, and hey, thank you for tuning in and not pressing skip or shuffle when the show came on your podcatcher of choice. You're giving us a chance, and I do thank you. So, let me see if I can make it worth your while, because today's show is going to be a little tech-heavy, and I hope you don't mind that. But the good news is I think our topic today might be a bit of a help for some libraries to get their message out and perhaps better advertise their services, events, staff picks, all of that kind of stuff. And what am I talking about? Well, I'm talking about digital signage. Now, this is something you've probably seen. You just might not have known it had a name or something like that. But digital signage, at its heart, is pretty simple. Usually, it's a big screen monitor, usually one of those really decent flat panel HD TVs, that are just mounted to the wall, and all it does is display some slides. Every 10 or 15 seconds, a new slide or image or something comes on the screen to talk about an event or a sale or anything like that. Whatever you can put on an image, you can put on a digital signage solution. So in a library situation, and I've seen this myself before, as a matter of fact, the library I work for uses a digital signage solution. We use them to talk about upcoming events at the different branches. There's slides for latest movies added to the collection, or something that we want to call attention to, like if there's a new summer blockbuster coming out that's based on a book or something, we might have a slide up there that ties the two together. Hey, before you go see the movie, read the book. Anything like that. It could be something as simple as there's a story time every Wednesday to, hey, we're going to have this famous person at the library in 2 weeks. You should probably come. So a digital signage solution can do that for you, and it's fairly low maintenance and fairly low work because after you make the slides, you should just be able to put them on the screen. Now, there's a few ways to do this, and I'm just going to talk about one of those today. And the difference between my way and other ways is the way I'm going to talk about today, like most of the stuff that I talk about on the show, is free, it's open source, and you can do it with rather inexpensive hardware. And if you have stuff laying around, if you have some computers laying around, you can do it with repurposed hardware. Because, after all, libraries tend to have budget issues. We never have money for all of the things we want. So we tend to save things. Just because we replaced a computer doesn't mean we just throw out the old computer. We'll keep it. We might hold on to it. It might get repurposed. So here's an idea that you can repurpose a couple of computers for. Or maybe one. You can get yourself a Raspberry Pi or something like that. And set yourself up a digital signage solution. So let's get into that and talk about what you're going to need, maybe how much it's going to cost, and how much work you're going to have to put into it. Because it is a little tech heavy. You do kind of have to know a little bit about what you're doing, but this is definitely not developing something new from scratch. And for a couple of hours of work, you can have a digital signage solution that sits in one branch or several branches. All you need is the equipment. All you need is a little time. So let's get into it. So before we get up and running with the technology, we should probably talk about the things that you will need to set up a digital signage solution. Because there are a few things that you'll need, and there are a couple things you'll need to consider. The first thing you'll need, of course, is a digital sign of some kind. That could be a computer monitor just sitting on a table someplace, or it could be one of those big screen, flat panel, high definition televisions that you can mount to a wall or something like that. Either way, if you're going to have digital signs, you're going to need a digital sign to display them on. The monitor hanging on the wall is usually a pretty good thing, because if you can get one of those big screens and just mount it on a wall someplace, that's not bad. It's nice and big. They're fairly inexpensive. I mean, you can get a decent, you know, HD TV thing for $300-$400 now. After all, it doesn't have to be the biggest, best thing in the world. All you're going to be doing on it is what amounts to be a glorified PowerPoint. So, once you figure out what you're going to use for your digital sign, you have to kind of figure out where you're going to put it. Now, if you have self-checkout machines, that's a pretty good place because people tend to congregate near the self-checkout machines. But if you don't, then look around. What are the high-trafficked areas in your library? Maybe you want to put it over by the new book display. Or maybe you want to hang it on a wall above your public hold pickup shelves. Or maybe you want to put it over near your new DVDs. Heck, maybe you want to put it between the men's and women's restrooms. Any place that has high traffic, and that way, people will see it. The other thing to consider is the slides themselves. You do not want muted slides in shades of gray, not even if you're advertising 50 Shades of Gray. You don't want muted slides. You want something that pops, something that shows off the screen. You want a slide that's nice and bright and vibrant and is the kind of thing where if you shut off all of the lights in the library, people will wonder what that glow is. So, that's the kind of thing you want to do. So you're going to want to consider what kind of monitor you want to use, where you're going to put it, and kind of how you design the slides that are going to go on it. Beyond that, you're going to need one, perhaps more computers. The software I'm going to talk about today is called Xibo, and that's X-I-B-O. Now, that could be wrong. I might be pronouncing it incorrectly, because you get an X involved there. Like so many things on the internet, once an X shows up, things can go sideways pretty quickly. So that could be Xibo, it could be Shibo, it could be Kaibo or Kibo. I don't know. So I'm just going to call it Xibo. I think that's right. It sounds right to me. That looks right to me. And you can pick it up at xibo.org.uk. Now, if you're driving along or just don't have a piece of paper or something like that, don't worry. You can pick this all up in the show notes, which is available at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. Just look for episode 17. So, Xibo is a free open source digital signage solution and is what we're going to be talking about as to how to set up and get out on your display. Now, Xibo itself, which we'll talk about more in a few minutes, believe me. But Xibo itself works off of a client-server model. There is a server that basically sits there and tells all of the clients what slides to show. Now, if you've only got, say, one branch with one display, then your client server could actually be on the same machine if you wanted to. Though I do want to warn you up front, Xibo works best on a Linux server with a Windows client. So this is great if you happen to have some hardware laying around that you can repurpose. If you've got a box with Windows on it already, hey, hang on to that. That might be useful for you as we move along. But the server itself, I should also say, does not need to be one of those highly expensive rack-mounted servers that goes in a data center and has cables all coming out of the back of it and multiple redundancies and failover systems in case the power goes out. I mean, you can, but seems a bit overkill. So, for instance, at work where I've been playing with this, the server that I have running Xibo is a Dell box. It's just a regular run-of-the-mill desktop-looking computer box. It's a little bit beefed up because it was designed to be a server at a branch. It was there to basically hold some data and information, and that was about it. But it's not very powerful. It's, you know, it has some server technology in it, but anything would work as long as it's fairly you know, fairly modern, say the last 5 to 10 years, you could probably get it working. And that's all it is. The client that I had in my tests and in my prototyping and stuff just happened to be the other desktop computer sitting on my desk, which is running Windows 7. That's pretty easy. So if you have a computer out there running Windows of almost any flavor, you'd probably want something a little newer than XP. This would probably work for you. Now, let's talk about the server real quick. The server itself is going to be running off of Linux. And the good news is Linux is free. And the secondary good news is if you already have a computer laying around that's not really doing anything, it's one of those things that got upgraded, but you just can't throw out technology that is not broken. Well, hey, dig that thing out, dust it off, maybe open it up and get that compressed air can and give it a good cleaning and all of that. Because maybe we can find a new use for it. And that new use is for a Zybo digital signage server. Now, like I said, that runs on Linux. You can kind of install whatever flavor you want, but I'm going to talk about Kubuntu. Because whenever I install Linux, I usually wind up installing Kubuntu. Sue me, but I do like the KDE desktop. I just think it's beautiful. I like using it. It's the thing that I always go to. And, you know, that's just what I use. But any of the Ubuntu flavors will work. So Zubuntu, Lubuntu, Ubuntu itself. Yeah, there's all kinds. So I used Ubuntu. And on Ubuntu, it's pretty easy to install the rest of the things you need, which is a LAMP server. Now, LAMP is LAMP, Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP. Linux is, of course, the operating system. Apache is the web server. Now, lest you think this is some fringe web server that no one uses except geeks and things like that, I would say that probably half the web, maybe more, is powered by Apache. That's not, you know, a statistic that I can back up right here because I don't have anything in front of me. But millions, if not billions, of websites use Apache as their web server. It's a very well-known quantity. It's a very well-known bit of software. There are tutorials and documentations and forums and books and all kinds of things about how to use the Apache web server. So this is something that is robust and it is well-known and some might even say it is well-loved among certain web geeks. So there's Apache, that's the A in LAMP. The M is MySQL, which is a database server. Now, MySQL not only is a database and it's not only a SQL database, but it talks to Apache really well. They sort of speak a common language, and the great thing about that is Apache can serve and create web pages based on data from a MySQL database. That's kind of what it's for. And finally, the P is for PHP, which is a programming language that sort of gets used to make the Apache and MySQL stuff talk to each other. Now, PHP, in case you're curious, is short for PHP Hypertext Processor. Yes, PHP is actually part of the abbreviation for PHP. It's a Linux geek thing. We won't go into that. But with that, LAMP, Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP, you can have Zybo up and running in just a few minutes. Now, to get a LAMP stack installed upon your Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Zubuntu, whatever Ubuntu server, you need to type two commands, which I'm just going to put in the show notes at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. These two commands will get you all installed with a LAMP server. The only caveat I am going to bring up right here is that when you install this stuff, it's going to ask for a password for MySQL. This is for the root user, which is the god-tier super user admin that controls everything in the database. Give it one. Give it a password and write it down. Beat around on the keyboard, do whatever you need to do, but give it a fairly decent password. Write down the password and stick it someplace safe. You aren't going to need that password often, but sometimes you do, and at least you have one laying about, and you have a secure database, which is always nice. So, okay, get those two things installed. It's not very hard, I promise. It took me about 10 minutes. After you get your LAMP stack installed, you're going to need to go get the Zybo server, which you can get from zybo.org.uk. Once again, links in the show notes. And you will need a Zybo client for Windows or Linux. Now, Zybo works really well with a LAMP server and a Windows client. There is a Linux client out there, but it's in development. It's still a little buggy. Your mileage may vary. If you want to be adventurous and daring, go ahead and install it. If you happen to have access to a Windows box, use that. It'll probably save you some headaches later on, and maybe keep the Linux client in the back for research and development and just kind of seeing if it's worth your hassle. The kind of good news about that is if you do decide it is worth your hassle, the Linux client's pretty easy, you know, on the processors. It's pretty easy on the RAM. You can use a low-powered solution for that Linux client. So, yeah, that is all you really need. Now let's talk about getting things set up and running. Because, after all, you've installed this LAMP server, and now you need to get things going, right? Great. So, we're going to do the hard part first, because you kind of need to do it first, and the hard part is the client, or is not the client, my apologies, the server. The server is, of course, installed on Linux. And like I said, I used Kubuntu for my Linux server. Now, I know there are some people out there, some Linux geeks, some even some friends of mine that will be, you know, wringing their hands and gnashing their teeth that I made a server with a graphical desktop operating environment on it. And oh my God, I even used KDE, which is sort of like a very graphical desktop environment. And you shouldn't need a graphical desktop environment on your Linux server. You should be able to do everything from the command line. Well, yes, you should. And yes, I can. But, you know, some things are easier if you just have a graphical environment installed. And seeing as how I not only work with Linux servers all day, I work with Windows servers all day, and they seem to get the job done with a graphical operating environment on them, I have no problem with a graphical desktop on my Linux servers. Most of the time, I'm not even logged into the stupid things. It's just sitting there doing what servers do, which is serving things. So, once you get your desktop environment figured out, or if you don't want one, you're going to need to install that LAMP stack. Once again, links in the show notes. Go download Zybo, and here's where things will get interesting. So, Zybo comes to you as just a sort of a compressed file. I believe it's a tar, gzip thingy, whatever. You can extract it, you know, with a double click in almost any desktop environment, and it gives you a folder. You want to copy this folder to the web directory on your server. So if you've installed Apache on Ubuntu, this directory is /var /www/html. Now, if you're furiously writing this down trying to keep up, relax, I am literally going to copy and paste these notes into the show notes, so don't feel bad if you don't keep up or you think you've missed something. So put that in /var/www/html. That is where the Zybo server will live. And, you know, it gives you like this standard sort of Linux-y name for that folder. It's basically like Zybo-version1-blah-blah-blah-blah-blah. You might want to give that directory an easier name to remember, like, you know, Zybo. That's pretty easy to remember. It's also less stuff to type if you need to mess with it. So rename the directory to Zybo. That'll make your life easier. Or call it digital signage, or call it signs, or whatever. Just be consistent. And remember what you called it. It might come in handy later. It will totally come in handy later. Okay. After you get the directory moved and renamed, we need to change the ownership of that directory over to the World Wide Web data user, Apache user, whatever you want to call it. And once again, I'll have this command in the show notes. There is a one-line command that you type in to change the ownership of that directory so that the website and the web server can use it. You can copy and paste. I won't tell anybody. It's okay. I copied and pasted too. Why type something when there's already a thing to tell you how to do it? So once you change the ownership, that gives the web server the permissions it needs to run and access that folder. Great. We're getting along. Things are moving along. So since this is an internal web service, I am not serving this thing out to the public. As a matter of fact, the server at my job where I have been prototyping and playing with this and fiddling with it is behind a firewall. And that's great because all of the clients would be behind a firewall too. So because this is an internal web service, I didn't really make any security-related changes to the Apache configuration. I actually just left all of that alone. So if you're wondering, crap, do I have to make any changes to the Apache configuration? No, you don't. So that's much easier. So, okay. You need to make a directory that will actually hold the images and things that you want to serve out to your clients. Basically, the things that you want to put on your digital signs, your screens, your things like that. That needs to actually be outside of the web serviceable directory. So I just put it in the var directory, you know, VAR. And I created a directory there called Zybo. Like I said, be consistent, and at least I know what that directory is for if I pop in there 2 months later and wonder what things are. So I just popped into var, created a directory called Zybo, and that's where the images and stuff for the screens will go. Okay, we are moving along. This is not hard stuff to do. As a matter of fact, other than the terminal command here and there, you can actually do all of this within the graphical desktop environment. So, okay, we're going to have to give that directory that we just created in var ownership. We're going to have to change the ownership of that to the web user too. Since I named the one directory Zybo and then I named the second directory Zybo, I can use the same command to do that. I am trying to do nothing if not keep this simple. So, okay, once again, links in the show notes. Now then, you'll need to take care of some PHP dependencies. And I'm telling you this in advance, and I will have an image in the show notes that kind of shows what happens if you try and install Zybo without these dependencies in place. The great thing about Zybo is as you try and make it work, it's going to tell you what it needs. It's actually kind of nice that it tells you what it needs. So I'm going to tell you in advance what it needs, and you can kind of just take care of those before you get going. So you're going to need the GD extension for PHP. I have no idea what GD means. I didn't bother to look it up. I just know it needed it. So, okay. I went and got that. Once again, there will be a link in the show notes. It's an apt-get install. And you can copy and paste that and get it. It also needs the mcrypt extension, which I also totally did not look up what it does or what it means, but I'm assuming it's probably something to do with encrypting things. Now, the mcrypt extension needs a little massaging to work, and I'm not going to bother you with that here during the show. Once again, I will put the instructions in the show notes to get that up and running. Finally, after you get those two dependencies, you're going to probably want to edit your PHP initialization file and configuration file to allow for larger uploads, because you're going to want to serve up some pretty high definition graphics to these slides. I mean, you want them to be easy to read, you want them to be easy to see, and if you're going to put a picture on it, well, it may as well be a really nice picture. So, if you pop into etc php5 apache 2 and edit the php.ini file there, you can change the post max size and upload max to 128 megabytes, and you can increase your max execution time to 120 seconds. That gives you time to upload larger files. Now, if you're sitting there in your car, hopefully at a stoplight, or you know, in your office, and you're looking at your phone or whatever device that you use to listen to podcasts and wondering what the hell I just said, it's okay. Once again, I will have all of this in the show notes, and you can almost go there and copy and paste everything. I have tried to make this easy to do because, hey, it should be easy to do. And I did the work so you didn't have to. So, okay, follow those directions. There's only a few of them. And seriously, it only took me about 45 minutes of poking and prodding and making sure that I was doing the right thing to get this thing up and running. Now that I've done it, and now I have some notes and some documentation as to what I did and what worked and what did not, I could probably set up one of these things in maybe 10, 15 minutes, and that includes downloading LAMP and getting it set up. So, yeah, it's not very hard. Like I said, I did the work so you didn't have to. So, okay, you're actually ready to go now. That's it. That's the initial setup. So what you want to go and do is go to your local host / Zybo in a web browser. So you can open up 127.0.0.1/Zybo. You can open up localhost/Zybo, whatever. What you're going to be doing is hitting the Apache web server on your own machine and installing Zybo. If all things go well, it'll give you a screen with a bunch of green check marks that says you've already fulfilled the needs for Zybo to work. And that's exactly what we just did. I will actually have a picture of this screen in the show notes so you can kind of see what it looks like. That way you can kind of get a feel of all of this before you just dive right in and start trying to do something weird and different. Because this is weird and different. I've done a lot with computers in my time. I've never set up a digital signage solution, so this was all new to me too. If you get stuck, Google is your friend, as is Stack Exchange. And hey, if you get stuck, I have an email. It's cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Drop me a line. Maybe we can work something out to get you up and going, because I do not mind helping. I'm not an expert, but, you know, I got it working. So if you're having an issue, maybe I've had that issue too. So pop over localhost/Zybo, follow the directions, and it's pretty simple. You'll be asked to create an admin password for the user, which is Zybo admin. There's an underscore in there, Zybo underscore admin. And you'll need a server key. And what the server key is used for is to add clients into the server. That way someone can't just come along and add clients into your server willy-nilly. Seems to be a bit of a security issue. So give it a server key, something that you can, you know, remember, but something that's kind of hard to guess. And that's it. You have a Zybo server. So all of that work, now you might be wondering, what next? Well, what next is pretty simple compared to the server. And what next is setting up a client. So the good news is now that you've set up the server, you've actually done the hard work. Setting up a client is very easy. And while Zybo does have a Linux client that will run on a Linux box, it seems to be in development, and it could be, you know, it seems to be that they are warning about bugs, possible issues, and things like that. So if you want to go down that path, feel free. But the fact of the matter is if you have a box running Windows, you're probably going to be a lot better off. And the Windows client is incredibly easy to set up because it sets up pretty much like any other Windows program. So you'll download the client, which once again, links in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. And download the client, double click it, and install it like you would any other Windows program. It'll ask for the standard default directories and stuff like that. You can roll with the defaults, just, you know, nod and smile. And after you're done, you'll be able to start getting set up. The client options are fairly easy to understand. The first thing is it's going to ask for your server address. Now, before I go further here, I should point out that you should make sure that the server can talk to the client. So if one is behind a firewall and the other is not, you don't have the proper linkage, then that's not going to work, because after all, the two computers need to be able to communicate with each other. Make sure that can happen first, because, you know, if they can't talk to each other, then you're not going to be able to get things working. So, okay, it's going to ask for a server address. Now, that could be the IP of your server. It could be a server name if you've named the server. For me, it's just the IP, and you literally put in a HTTP address there. So it's http://, whatever the number of your server is, and in this case, /Zybo, because that's the directory the Zybo server is in. It will ask for the server key, which I hope you wrote down or at least remember, because that is your password to add clients to the server. It'll ask you for a local library location, and what that is a place for it to cache images and things while it's playing them. And if it ever loses connection to the server, say, you know, the power goes out at wherever the server's at and there's no battery backup or, you know, whatever, it will keep playing the same series of slides until it reconnects. So it remembers what it was doing last time it talked to the server, and it will continue doing that until it can talk to the server again. There's also a setting for collection interval. And what this is simply how often does the client ping the server for new information. Now, you can set it for as low as 30 seconds, but that's a little excessive. If you're not uploading slides to this thing all day long, then 30 seconds really is not going to help you out very much. You could set it for maybe 5 minutes, or 10 minutes, or whatever. That's something you might have to fiddle around with just to find out what works best for you. I do wish to mention there's a noticeable skip when it does contact the server to see if there's anything new. It's not a bad skip, and if you're not looking for it, you probably won't see it. But once you see it, you can't unsee it, and you know exactly what happened. That was when it checked the server for new content. So if that only happens once every 5 minutes, it's not really going to get noticed. If it happens every 30 seconds, sooner or later, someone's going to see that, and they're going to wonder what's going on. The client generates a unique key for itself. That's fine. You don't have to fiddle with that. And that is everything you need to know on the General tab for the client. To register the client with the server, it's a bit of a two-step process. So what you want to do is have someone back on your server or have access to your server yourself. Have them ready, because they're going to need to do something there too. The first thing it's going to do is give you the server address that you just gave it. That way you can kind of look at it and say, okay, is this right? Yes, this is right. Great. It's also going to ask for a display name. And this is the name that you would refer to the display as in your server. So when you're uploading slides and things like that, and you want to assign them to a different display someplace, you want to give that display a useful name. So if this display is at your Lakeside branch, then you might just call the display name Lakeside or Lakeside branch. If it's at your Mountain View location, you would call it Mountain View. Just give it a name that makes sense, because, hey, it could be someone else later on that's looking at it, and if they don't understand your names, then that's just harder for everyone else. After you do that, there's a register button. So you go ahead and hit the register button, and what that does is it contacts the server and basically says, hey, I'm a new client and I want to play slides. And the server basically says, yes, but we need to make sure you're an approved client. And that's where you'll want to log in to the server as the admin, go to the display section, and approve the client. I'll have links to all the documentation on how to do this in the show notes. It's very easy. It is mouse clicking. So you're not doing any hardcore configuration and things like that. Especially on the client side, because really you're just looking at a Windows program and typing things and pushing buttons. That's about it. So once your client is registered, it's ready to go. You are all set. You can configure a couple of other things if you like. You can set the client width and height to the display that you would like to use on that client. So if the screen is only capable of showing 1280 by 720, you can set that as your client width and height. So there you go. Make whatever changes you want. As far as how often it gets the content, well, that's something that's going to be up to how often your workflow dictates that you upload slides to the system. It doesn't always check the server for new content, but that way, if you have a decent interval where maybe every 5 to 10 minutes it does, that way any new slide goes out, it'll show up very soon. Okay, so slides. Let's talk about getting slides up on your clients. This is all done on the server end. once your client is sort of set up and registered and running, everything's done on the server. You really don't have to fiddle with the clients all that much after that. So, okay. Pop over to your server and log in. You'll be using that Zybo underscore admin with whatever password you want. And from there, I'm going to have to let you work this one out on your own as to how you want to do it. Because Zybo offers you different solutions for different things. I'll give you a quick rundown of how I've been playing with it, though, and what's been working for me. So, I've got a couple clients set up, one of which happens to just be my desktop computer because it's right in front of me, it's easy to mess with. I also had another one set up at another computer just so I had two of them that I could fiddle with and send different slides to different computers, right? Okay. When you upload a slide, it's going to ask for a name for the slide. And it's going to ask if you want to, you know, add this to basically a set. And you can. And I actually recommend that you do. Because what you can do is you can have a set of slides that basically acts as a campaign. Now, you don't have to do a set of slides. You can just do one slide at a time and just assign one slide or one of each slide or one slide here and one slide there to different clients as you prefer. See, this is where it gets into the playtime aspect because you're going to have to figure out what's going to work best for your system. But being able to stack some slides basically in a deck is kind of cool. So say, you know, going back to Lakeside and Mountain View branch, Lakeside has a story time every Wednesday. So every Wednesday that event happens, I may as well have that slide going all the time at the Lakeside branch. Fine. Well, at Mountain View, they don't have the Wednesday story time. They do it on Tuesday. So they've got a different slide. So that slide never needs to show up at Lakeside because Lakeside is miles away from Mountain View and no one who goes to Mountain View is going to Lakeside. They're just too far away. So you can assign different sides to different sets and have those running on your displays as needed. The other thing that's great about a digital signage solution is you can plan slides in advance and pull them down when an event is over. So say there's an author coming out to the Lakeside branch in 2 weeks. Well, I can put that slide up today. And for the next 2 weeks, this slide is going to be showing at the Lakeside branch saying, hey, so-and-so is coming for a book signing and discussion. You should come. It's going to be cool. And 2 weeks comes and goes. The event happens. Well, obviously, I don't want that slide showing the day after the event, so I can set on a schedule, which is literally a calendar in Zybo, I can set that slide to come down after that, and it'll disappear from the screen. And that way, you keep your slides fresh and up to date. Slides will appear and disappear as needed. And this is how digital signage solutions work anyway. You kind of know what's coming. You have your event calendars set up and planned, sometimes months in advance. So you can also plan your slideshows months in advance too. But like I said, this is something that you'll have to play with and figure out what works best for you. Once again, links in the show notes for all of the documentation for Zybo. And this, the documentation for the system is fairly well done. There's pictures, there are step-by-step instructions, there are ideas. It's fairly well done, especially for a project that's still in development. So, if your library is looking for something to better display its events and get its information and its message out there in the public eye, literally by putting it where the public is on a big screen TV, where everyone in the public can see it, you really can't go wrong with Zybo because it'll run on older hardware. You can repurpose hardware to make it work. Even if you buy new hardware, you don't have to buy top of the line. And the operating system, aside from Windows, and the software is absolutely free. And that wraps up another episode of Cyberpunk Librarian, a very heavy tech episode, and I do apologize for that. But I hope you check out Zybo, especially if you need a digital signage solution and you're not looking to spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars to get one. If you already have a TV and you already have a couple computers, you can probably run Zybo today. I know it sounds like a bit of a thing to set up, but really it's not bad. Now that I kind of know what I'm doing and I have some notes to share with you, I hope to save your workflow and maybe get you up and running in about 30 minutes, client and server. It's not that bad. And hey, if you have any problems, by all means, drop a comment in the show notes, cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast, or you can get in touch with me. You can always email me at cyberpunklibrarian@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter. I am @Bibrarian. That is B-I-B-R-A-R-I-A-N. It is like librarian, but with a B. Or you can ping me on Google+. I am google.com/+DanielMesser. The tune you're currently digging on is Ode to a Baby Snowstorm by Ghostly Dust Machine. Earlier in the show, you heard Night Beach by Psychedelic Pedestrian. And hey, I picked up both of those things at the Free Music Archive. Yes, freemusicarchive.org, where they have got all kinds of tunes in all kinds of genres for any sort of project you might be working on. Lots of Creative Commons and lots of good stuff. Just pop over there, find a genre, press play. You'll find some quirky stuff. You'll find some great stuff. You'll find some stuff that you just don't understand. But hey, there's a lot of good stuff at Free Music Archive, so check them out. I'll, of course, have links to both of these songs in the show notes, which you can pick up at cyberpunklibrarian.com/podcast. As always, the opening track is Belly Dance at Ebisu by Ryo Miyashita, which is also available through the Free Music Archive. So, that about wraps up this episode of Cyberpunk Librarian. I thank you for tuning in. And hey, before I get out of here, I just want to remind you that you don't have to be high-tech to be low-budget, but it always helps if you're a cyberpunk. Take care now.